Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Mecklenburg County just went through a tax revaluation. Based on that, the city of Charlotte has designed a budget that is revenue neutral, yet still 90% of homeowners will owe more in property taxes in the coming year. Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiOrio has said that it is impossible for the county to remain revenue neutral if it intends to fund all of its priorities. And she added that means 91% of Mecklenburg County homeowners will end up paying more in taxes. As is the case with the city, commercial owners will see less of an increase, and homeowners in and around Uptown are likely to see the biggest increases. Everyone has a stake in this, so you might be interested to see where all this money is projected to go, and that is why we asked Dina DiOrio to join us to take us through the details. And she has brought along Mecklenburg County's Budget Director, Adrian Cox. Welcome back to you both. Nice to see you. Good morning.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Dean, let me start with you. If it had not been for the property revaluation that we go through every couple of years by law, would we be facing a property tax increase from the county?
I think it's likely because the tax increase is 1.6 cents and 1 cent of that is going to go to fund our new capital improvement plan. And that would have happened regardless of whether or not we had revaluation. And in terms of the 0.6 cents of the tax increase, it's really going to fund investments in people, which continues to be a struggle, I think, across the board, not only for the county, but also for all of the partners that we fund.
How much more are we paying in a tax increase because of the revaluation versus what would have happened had we not?
Well, I think, as you know, everybody, the vast majority of property owners will see a tax increase regardless of the tax increase that we're proposing. And that's because property values disproportionately went up higher than they did for commercial values. The exact amount of your tax increase will depend on the value of your property, how much it went up. And so it just really depends on the increase that you received on your property value.
So the city of Charlotte, and by extension Mecklenburg County, is growing more populous every single day. I think it's 100 some people move here allegedly every day. Growth increases the tax base. Growth has led to more homes being built, more apartments being built, more businesses opening their doors. We and others around the country are almost at full employment, maybe at full employment. So why isn't all of this growth paying for itself? Why isn't it offsetting whatever additional costs are coming our way because of the growth?
Well, we also know that inflation is at a pretty much an all-time high over very many years. So the cost of us providing services is much higher than it had been in the past. And that's something we have to take into consideration. But again, the growth revenue on the property value or on the tax base only went up about 3% in this budget cycle. So while we are seeing a tremendous amount of growth, the actual growth on the tax base only went up 3%. We are seeing some growth in sales tax, though. To your point, we've got full employment, so people are working, people are spending money, and so that does help. But when you talk about the capital improvement program and our requirement to issue bonds for schools, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that, as well as for the county CIP, I mean, that is really a big portion of where this tax increase is coming from.
So would you say that growth pays for itself? And if it doesn't, why do we encourage it?
Well, I would say this, growth does help offset some of the costs, but when the cost of providing services outpaces the growth that you have, then it's not going to cover the cost of the services that we provide.
So before we talk about what is in this budget and what the county's needs are and what property taxes may be needed to fund all of this, talk about the process. How does this all work? I know this is not, you don't just come up with this in the last 2 weeks before you present the budget. This goes on literally all year long, Adrian Cox. So what is the process?
So Mike, you're correct. It does go on all year long. But it, in terms of kind of the start point, that's when we have our retreat with our board in January, and we hear from them what their priorities are for the upcoming year, and also what their interests are, and report to them some of the things that we're expecting to see for the upcoming budget. And we continue to have those meetings throughout the year. After that, we kick off internally with all of our departments, and our departments who have been working on their strategies and plans, they put together a budget request for the manager's consideration. We then review and analyze all of those requests, and the manager prepares her recommendation that's presented to the board. And then the board has a chance to review everything, which is where we're at now, and make a final decision on the budget.
So essentially, Dina, you and Adrian know what it takes to run the basic county services, and you have to overlay that underneath that, and you overlay the hopes and dreams and desires and priorities of the county commission. Would that be accurate?
It is. We try to align the budget to the board's priorities, but we need to make sure that we can provide basic services first. So we always make sure that we address those issues, and then we determine what we can fund as it relates to board's priorities.
And when you presented the budget to County Commission, you said it's not possible for the tax rate to remain revenue neutral to achieve the county's many critical goals. Were you talking about the basic services, or were you talking about the priorities and interests of commission?
Oh, it's a combination of both. You know, we look at the board's priorities, and, you know, we fund those with ongoing property tax revenue or sales tax revenue. So that is part of that. But we also try to use some of our reserves to pay for non-recurring expenses. So it's really a combination. It's kind of like making sausage, but we don't like to tell people it's like making sausage.
Yeah. It's very confusing in Charlotte-Mecklenburg because the city pays for some things, the county pays for other things, and the state comes in and pays for still more. So, Adrian, what are the basic services that Mecklenburg County must fund?
The basic things that Mecklenburg County must fund, a lot of those are going to be health and human services types of programs. So we have our public health department. We have social services where we have to determine benefit eligibility and provide other support for people. We have the jail and the sheriff. We provide support for the courts, not operating necessarily, but the facility. And then we are a partner in funding education.
So I can't blame you for our front end alignment breaking roads.
No, you do not.
Okay, so when we talk about the priorities and interests set by the council, where did those priorities and interests come from? Are these being filtered from constituents through council members to you, or are these things that the council thinks or the commission thinks it might be a good idea to embark on?
I think it comes from their constituents. I think they're very in tune to what their constituents are interested in. And so things that we fund as it relates to board priorities around early childhood development, the environment, health access, housing security, workforce, those are things that our board sees in the community that they think are important. And so, and we help them kind of craft that. So it's, you know, we say it's health access, but what does that really mean? And how can we operationalize that? So there's various descriptions that talk about each of the priorities, which help guide how we make decisions about what to fund.
And so when you look at the hopes and dreams and desires of constituents as filtered through commissioners or even initiated by them, and you balance that against what you have to provide by law, how do you come up with what it costs? Is it a guesstimate? Are there guidelines, Adrian, that you go by that you know fairly well that if you want to do this, it's going to cost this?
So some of it is an estimate, particularly if we're, you know, if we're not sure about the total cost, but we try to be as precise as possible to actually determine what is it actually going to cost for everything in the budget. We don't like to put anything in there that's not going to be spent.
And everybody who has a budget, and I hope that's everybody listening who has a budget, because you got to balance your inflows against your outflows. How much of it is comes to fruition? In other words, Adrian, how close to actually sticking to the budget are we in any given year?
So we're usually pretty good. So we, I would say pre-pandemic, we were able to spend about 97%, 98%. During the pandemic, we had a little bit less certainty about our, kind of what was happening with the revenue. So we may have gotten to about 96%. But then those investments sometimes take a little bit longer to spend. So the county is fairly good at sticking to its budget.
And both the city and the county have good fiscal track records in terms of being fiscally sound. Is that a challenge in the face of all the growth? Would it be easier to achieve if we weren't growing quite as fast as we are, Adrian?
Well, growth has its own challenges. Because certainly the more people that come to the county, the more people that you need to serve. But also not having growth has challenges as well. So I would say they're both fairly challenging.
I guess the city provides fiscal infrastructure. Is that who provides the sewer and the water and all that sort of thing?
That's going to be the city for the most part. We do play a role in stormwater, but what you're talking about, utilities, that's going to be the city.
Okay. So, Dina, it is projected that 91% of county homeowners will experience a property tax increase. That's on top of the 90% of homeowners in the city of Charlotte who have been told they, too, will experience a property tax increase because of the revaluation. What is the average increase for someone in a median-priced home?
I think Adrian has that information. Okay. He can provide that for you.
Adrian?
I can tell you that, at least for the county's tax, the median home, we would expect that it's going to grow by about 59% in value. Based upon that growth alone, just at the revenue neutral, the annual tax increase would be $209, and that's $17.42 a month. Based upon the 1.6 cent increase, that would add an additional $64 annually, or $5.33 a month. So the median home, we would expect that the annual increase would be $273.
And a median home is what price point?
So the median home was valued at $232,000, and it is currently valued at $369,675.
Wow. And that's on top of the city. So we're talking probably about what, $400 to $500 for a median price home over the course of a year?
That's probably close.
I don't think the cities would be that high because their tax rate's not nearly as high as ours. So theirs would be, if ours is $270, theirs would be less than that.
Okay. And the city has made a point of saying that theirs is the lowest tax rate of any municipality in the state. A lot of areas in this town housing the most vulnerable among us, the economically stressed residents, older residents on a fixed income, et cetera, are in areas of the city around the center city where property values evidently, according to the assessor, have increased the most. It's an area that is also where we have a dearth of affordable housing. And does it concern you or county commissioners that those property owners are likely to experience a greater percentage increase?
Yes, those values, because of the gentrification and their proximity to uptown, increased in some cases on average 78%, those values. And so we are concerned about that, and we have a plan to address that. And we can talk about that after the break if you'd like.
Yep, you will do that. Absolutely, I would like to come back and talk about that. Dina DiOrio is here, Mecklenburg County Manager with Adrian Cox, the County Budget Director at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with the county manager, Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiOrio, and Adrian Cox, who is the Mecklenburg County Budget Director, about the budget. and about what was presented to County Commission, I think it was last week, in terms of the coming fiscal year and what it will mean to you, because there will be a property tax increase for 91% of people living in Mecklenburg County. And as we just said before the break, some of the most stunning property value increases are occurring in areas around the center city in that crescent in which a lot of economically deprived individuals live, and they are experiencing, at least per capita, the greatest increase in property values, and therefore their taxes are likely to rise in a way that will affect them more than it would affect somebody living perhaps in a million-dollar home. We face a dearth of affordable housing. That stock is diminishing, and even as we try to build it. And this is just another nail in the coffin, isn't it? How do we deal with this?
So one of the things that we put in our budget is an expansion of a program that we had sort of piloted in the last couple of years. It's called the Homes Program. And for those who have qualifying incomes, they can receive a grant from Mecklenburg County and the City of Charlotte. We're partnering with them to offset the increase in their property taxes. So it's a grant program. You have to meet certain income eligibility to receive it, but it is an effort for us to be able to help offset that tax increase. And we've expanded the program from $250,000 a year to $14 million. And so we've put a significant amount of money in the budget to help lessen the impact of the property tax increase, because we understand it can have a significant impact in certain portions of the community.
So it's tied to income of the individual, but if we're trying to preserve affordable housing, and I may have this completely wrong in my head, so correct me if I am, an individual may look at his or her suddenly rising property values and say, it's time to get out. It's time to sell. And that means further gentrification and further loss of affordable housing, doesn't it?
Well, I think if we can try to help people pay those property taxes, I think most people want to remain in their homes. And that's what this is really designed to be, as an anti-displacement program. And I think for those people who are maybe interested in selling, you know, they have to think about whether or not they have some place to go. And so it's hard in this community to find another place to go. So we want to keep people in their homes if that's their desire. And I think this program will help do that.
Is the money you just spoke about separate from the $25 million in new funding to help residents achieve housing security? Or is that part of the same pot of money?
I don't think it's the same pot, right, Adrian?
If you're referring to the board's priorities, and that is part of the $25 million.
Oh, it is.
You're talking
okay.
About housing and security.
So in we talked about this when the city manager was on with the mayor a couple of weeks ago, that they too have higher value, a greater increase in property values of residential property as opposed to commercial property. The same is true in the county. The last property revaluation in 2019, it was the reverse. Commercial properties appreciated more than single family homes and other kinds of residences. And Scott on Facebook writes, I keep hearing about how the majority of increases are residential, but the commercial building my business is located in is going up 63% and has gone up over 400% since I moved here 7 years ago. Can you address that?
Well, I think historically what we've seen is that commercial property values have increased more rapidly than residential. This is the first time, I think, since I've been in Mecklenburg County, where we've seen residential values go up disproportionately higher than commercial values. So commercial values in some cases are still going to see an increase in their taxes because their values have gone up. But based on where you sit, whether if your value went up higher than the median, then you'll see your taxes go up. If your value went up lower than the median, you'll see your taxes go down. So it really just depends on what the increase was for your particular property.
So you said it was impossible to fund the county's needs and its list of priorities by staying revenue neutral. And revenue neutral means what? Define that.
So revenue neutral means that the tax rate that you set will generate the same amount of revenue as the prior year, allowing for some growth. So basically, you get the same revenue plus growth, and you set the tax rate accordingly.
So as you put together this new budget in the face of this revaluation, Adrian, was the mandate to come as close to revenue neutral, a revenue neutral budget as humanly possible? Is that what the charge was? Or were you just looking to fund the priorities and interests of commissioners?
So I guess let me answer it this way, that, you know, every year that we make a budget, we try to make the budget to achieve the goals of the community and also have the lowest tax burden as possible. So it's always a balance between, you know, what we can afford and what's going to be the cost. So I didn't have a directive to meet a revenue neutral, but we always try to be the most effective and efficient that we can with the budget.
And when you put in, when you plug in all these numbers of things that will, of what things will cost, these priorities, these special interests that the commission has, and then you, the basic services underneath all of that, and it comes out to be an extraordinary number, what then? Do you go back to commission, and or do you just put together the budget and say, here it is, here's what you asked for, here it is, and they start whittling away at it? Or is there some pre-whittling going on before you actually present the budget? Dina.
There's no pre-whittling going on. we present the budget, and then the board will review it. And I would say to you that since I've been county manager, it's my 10th year, this is my 11th budget, the board has never tried to cut the budget. If anything, there's always requests to add more.
Okay. You're recommending, let's go to some of the details in this budget, and we'll start with the schools, because you're recommending, I think, a $2.3 billion budget. Overall, that's a 7.2 increase, or $156.2 million more than the current budget. Is that the whole county budget, or is that schools?
Oh, that's the whole county budget.
Okay, the whole county budget. So how much did that budget increase over last year?
Which one, the county budget?
Yeah, the county budget.
$156 million.
Oh, I just said that, didn't I? Silly me. Mm-hmm. Okay. When it comes to numbers, Adrian, you're going to find out that I am adult. Is the money that the county gives to Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools the largest piece of the budget every year, or are there other entities or interests that take more money?
Education is the largest piece of the budget, and CMS is the largest partner that we have in education and literacy.
Is that the case in almost every county in North Carolina, or is it particular to the larger counties in Mecklenburg?
I don't know. I know that most of the larger counties that I have looked at, education is the largest piece of their budget, but some of the other counties, it may be different.
So the whole county budget is $2.3 billion. CMS asked for $3 billion. For up to 30 projects, you're recommending $2.5 billion. Explain how that works in a $2.3 billion budget.
So the CIP, the Capital Improvement Plan, is not part of the operating budget. So okay. That's separate. So you can't, the capital stuff is a separate conversation, but we did need a 1 cent tax increase to pay for the upcoming Capital Improvement Plan. So they're linked because we need revenue to pay for it. But the CMS projects, as well as the county CIP, which is in total, it's $4 billion. We will need a tax increase to pay for those projects over time.
And they asked for even more than that. And I think they whittled it down a little bit and came back with the $3 billion request. And you're recommending $2.5 billion. So everybody comes in when they have a negotiation. They come in with more than they anticipate getting. But how will this lesser amount impact what they believe they have to do?
So, you know, we really told them that, you know, we could only afford $2.5 billion, which is a lot of money, and it's the largest potential school bond in this history of the state of North Carolina. So it's fairly significant. But the conversations that I've had with the interim superintendent and now that the real superintendent is that just because the amount of money is less doesn't mean we cut projects out of the CIP. What they're going to go back and do is reevaluate those projects to see if they can reconfigure some of those or rescope some of those so that they can get as many projects built with the $2.5 billion.
Again, the CIP is the Capital Improvement plan, and they will be funded through bonds that will be on the ballot in November, but we have to have the ability to pay back those bonds, and that's why that 1 cent tax increase is going on then. And that is separate from the other part of the budget request from CMS, which we'll talk about. There has been some friction, as you may have noticed, between the county commission members and the CMS school board in the last several years. Much of that is over money and accountability. Has that been ironed out?
I think we're at a point, and this is me talking, I can't speak for my board, but I think we're at a point where we've got a new school board, we've got a new superintendent. The school board has come forward and they have talked to our board about their goals and guardrails and how they're tracking performance and the measures they're taking to meet those goals. So I would say me, Dina, is that they have done what we've asked them to do. And I think we're at a point now where we have to give them an opportunity to demonstrate that they can improve, the achievement gap that we're seeing in our school system.
I believe the initial ask for these bonds was, I think, $5 billion. And then they reduced it to three because you said that was impossible. And now it's 2.5 because you say the three is not possible. And they came in with a lot of projects. They had to reduce the number of projects and what those projects were in order to comply with this $2.5 billion funding request that you've said okay to. What will that money pay for?
What, the $2.5 billion?
Yes.
It's 30 school projects. It's renovations, expansions, relocations across the board. It's, I think, 12 high schools, a certain number of middle schools, elementary schools. So it really is, reaches, I think, all parts of the community. And it's really reinvesting, I think, in a lot of older schools. There are some new schools in there, but the vast majority of them, from my review, is reinvestment and expansion and renovation of existing schools.
To what end? Just making them more modern for air conditioning, for what? What will be accomplished by this?
Well, I think they're older facilities. They need to be upgraded. I think in some cases, they're going to expand them. So they're going to allow for additional capacity. I mean, we do still have a number of schools that have trailers on the schoolyard there. So I think this will help with that. And it's really making sure that equitably we have nicer facilities across the entire county.
Of course, this is going to be decided in a county referendum in November by voters. What if they say no? What happens then?
Well, then we're going to have to go back and look and see what opportunity we have to use other forms of financing, non-voted debt, to see if we can do some of the most critical projects. But what we would have to do is work with CMS to reevaluate that and then potentially put it back on the ballot at a later date. And we had that experience in 2005. We had a failed referendum. The county picked some priority projects, did those, and then put it back on the ballot. I think it was 2007.
I mean, a lot of things could change between now and November, but if property owners are facing a city property tax increase and a county tax increase, does it concern you that perhaps they would look at this bond referendum and say, that's enough? No.
I don't believe so. I think the community really values its schools. And we've heard that people want us to support our schools. So I don't have any concern that the bonds will pass. But like you said, time will tell.
So the $2.5 billion is for the bonds for these capital improvements. But you're also recommending that the commission fully fund the school's $38.9 million request. Is that the operating fund?
Yes.
How will that money be used?
The vast majority of that money is investments in people. So it is to increase a supplement for teachers. It's to match the state's pay increase for county-funded employees. It's to implement a market study related to principal pay, as well as non-certified staff, because those salaries are not keeping pace with what they need to fill those positions. So almost 80% of that will be invested in people. The remainder of that, there's $6.8 million, I believe, that will be a pass-through to charter schools. And then, of course, the county is mandated to support the opening of new facilities. So it provides some staff and operating support for two new schools that'll be opening this fall.
Yeah, 79% of that $38.9 million goes to salaries and benefit increases for school employees. The remainder, as you said, funds things like increases in charter school enrollment, maintenance, and operation of two new schools. How much of a dent in CMS's budget from the county does the funding of charter schools make in their in the money they receive?
It's pretty significant. Adrian, do you know how much that goes to charter schools every year?
I believe it's about $80 million that goes to charter schools.
And are there any metrics to measure how much more successful or how much less successful, in fact, some of these charter schools may be in comparison to CMS? How much bang for our buck are we getting through funding these schools and taking it away from CMS?
So, you know, that's not our area of expertise. And so I'm not really prepared to talk about
it.
It would be CMS, or it's really the state, because the state really monitors the performance of charter schools. That's not something that happens locally.
The General Assembly is considering expanding opportunity scholarships, allowing them for every student in the state. And that means that every Republican lawmaker in both the House and Senate is behind this idea. This is tying money to individual students and not to school systems. Even if not every child took advantage of these opportunity scholarships, it stands to substantially, it seems to me, reduce the number of pupils in the seats at public schools here and around the state. So should we be holding off on making decisions about capital improvements and building new schools until we find out what the actual impact of any opportunity scholarship expansion might end up being?
You know, that would really be something that we'd have to talk to CMS about. I don't think so, because I think, like I said, this is really a lot of this is investment and renovation of existing schools. It's not doesn't include a lot of expansion as we've seen in the past. And so I think these investments in these schools make sense at this time.
If the legislature opts to give these scholarships to every child, are taxpayers likely to say yes to a bond referendum for CMS?
I think so, but, you know, time will tell. We'll see what happens in November.
Because if I'm going to take my child out of public school and take these opportunity scholarships and give them a private school education because suddenly I can afford to, why would I care about CMS?
Well, I think, you know, I understand that point, but there's only a limited amount of capacity in private schools. And so, I mean, there's options for people, but at the end of the day, there's only so much capacity. So I don't know how many people would actually be able to leave CMS and go elsewhere. I just don't have that data.
Dina DiOrio is with us. She's the Mecklenburg County Manager. Adrian Cox is the Mecklenburg County Budget Director. We're talking about the Mecklenburg County budget as she has presented to County Commission and which will be voted on in the coming weeks. We will continue our conversation about other aspects of things in the budget when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiOrio is with us along with Adrian Cox, Mecklenburg County's Budget Director. They just recently presented the next fiscal year's budget to County Commission. It includes a tax increase for most property owners in Mecklenburg County. And we're going through some of the details of what you'll be paying for, what you'll be getting for that money. Most people acknowledge the critical nature of early childhood education and the role that plays in a successful person's life going forward. Your budget would put funding for early childhood ed above the state rate for pre-K programs. You're proposing $1.1 million, or that's about $900 per child. Why that figure, and what do you hope will be the result of it?
So we're putting that money into the NC pre-K program for classrooms that are in child-based or community-based child development centers, because we want to make sure that we continue to have parity between the county's program, our MEC pre-K program, and the state program. And the state program, unfortunately, does not fund NC pre-K at the level that we do for MEC pre-K. And so we want to make sure that every child that is in an NC pre-K program or MEC pre-K program have the same quality teachers. They get the same pay, same benefits. And by increasing it to $900 per child, that makes it the same level as MEC pre-K program.
I think this is an increase. So is this something new? Did this come from the county commission? Where did the idea for doing that come from?
We were talking to actually our partner in NC Pre-K is CMS, and we've been working with them over the last year or so to try to make sure that we are making sure that all the programs are the same quality and that families, whatever they pick for their child, they have the same experience. So it's something that we've been working on with CMS, and we think it's really important.
Both the city and the county are talking about raising employee salaries. We had the city on a couple of weeks ago. They say they have to raise those salaries in order to maintain competitive and reduce turnover. You are recommending $68.7 million for what you're calling investments in people or raises countywide, a 44% increase. The city is proposing a 6% salary increase for all hourly employees, a 4% increase for salaried employees, and an 8% increase for police. How does that compare with what you are proposing for county employees?
So we are proposing a 3% across the board for all employees, as well as a performance-based component that will go from 0 to 5%. So depending on your performance, you could get up to 5% on the performance side and 3% across the board. So you could get up to 8% depending on your performance. So, and again, we have different types of employees than the city does. So I don't think it's, you can really compare the same way. We don't have, you know, solid waste, and it's just a little bit different than what the city has. So I don't really like to compare. But we feel like ours is pretty competitive.
Your projected raises are less than the city's. Is that because the county employees are already making more than city employees on average?
Well, they're not. I mean, if you're a good performer, you can get up to 8%. So I don't know that ours are less, but again, different types of employees that are just paid differently. So, you know, we have, you know, social workers and nurses, you know, and other employees that are not hourly. So it's just different.
And the city cited turnover and the difficulty in attracting people, and they want to be able to pay a living wage to their employees. I'm sure the county has the same desire. Are you experiencing high turnover rates? Are you experiencing difficulty in attracting people to come to work for Mecklenburg County at the moment?
So we have been struggling with that for a while, and we have filled a lot of positions. So we're able to recruit, but we've had trouble retaining, and we've been really challenging our department directors to really make sure that when we get new employees, that they're properly trained, they're properly onboarded, that they're really integrated into the workplace, because we're seeing the biggest turnover in employees that have a tenure of 2 years or less. So to me, these are employees that are not being integrated, they don't feel connected to the workplace. And when they do exit interviews and exit surveys, they're not leaving necessarily because of money. They feel like they don't have proper supervision, you know, conversations around leadership. So it's not always money. And we're really, really trying to focus on retention as well as recruitment.
Was this a problem prior to the pandemic, or is this something that so many other organizations, both private and public, are experiencing as a result of the pandemic? This whole shift in the paradigm of work and the way people regard work and their work-life balance, is that part of this? Is this something generational, or is it something else?
Well, we've seen it obviously change significantly since the pandemic. And so, you know, I think it is a shift. I think we're seeing it shift back a little bit. I think you're seeing a lot of large corporations are calling their people back to work. And this whole hybrid, you know, work at home thing, I think we're starting to see the shift back to coming to the workplace. So I think it'll just take a little bit more time. We're still allowing, you know, we changed our hybrid work from 3 days a week at home to 2 days a week at home starting July 1, because I really feel like if we can get people back in the workplace and have people interact with their coworkers and get them integrated, we might not have as much turnover as we've seen in the past.
Yeah, talk about that for a second. I mean, clearly the pandemic necessitated a lot of this work from home if we wanted to get the spread of COVID under control, which we did, but that's long gone now, and people still don't want to come back to work. And a lot of companies and a lot of organizations like Mecklenburg County are saying, okay, well, if you can make it happen and work from home 3 days a week or 4 or 5 days a week, just work, just make sure the work gets done. From your point of view, does that somehow impact esprit de corps? Does it make people feel less connected to the organization? And if so, why aren't we just saying, come back to work or find a job?
So I think anybody who knows me in Mecklenburg County knows that I am not a supporter of working from home. I have never been a supporter of working from home. And I do believe that it does undermine corporate culture, collaboration, and building what you say, that culture of esprit de corps. And so, you know, we did allow people 3 days a week. We're cutting it back to two, and just giving people time to adapt. And so we'll see where we go in the future. I'm not going to guarantee that we're going to continue this hybrid work environment, but we're going to continue to look at it. And make sure that we're doing what's in the best interest of the organization and what's best interest of the community. You know, we're a people organization. We serve people.
But you can't serve people from home. But you're the boss. So
I am the boss.
Exactly. So why don't you say come back?
Because I want to make sure that we don't trigger an additional number of people leaving the organization for that reason. So I think we're going to look at it over time and we're going to see how it goes.
You're also recommending $3.6 million for EMTs, paramedics, and other staff at Medic, along with $6.7 million for equipment, which would include vehicles and technology replacement and other things. Recently, Medic informed county residents that response times might be slow at the moment when it comes to non-life-threatening situations, and they made that announcement in order to preserve resources. Will this additional funding stop that? Help it?
Well, the response configuration that Medic put into place was not in response to staffing. It's in response to what's best practice. So I think people are confusing the two, and they're really separate issues. But that these raises should really help Medic get additional employees. They partnered with Central Piedmont Community College to have a paramedic or an EMT program. And they're graduating a bunch of people next week that are going to come to work for Medic. So they are doing a better job of filling their vacancies. And of course, recruitment and pay are something that they're looking about, and we need to support them in that effort.
In your address to the county when you presented the budget, you said that for the first time, the board's priorities include health access. The county is responsible for public health. So how can that be?
So health access is not just public health, it's also physical health, which we do not do. Public health does not do physical health. And it also includes behavioral health. And so we included this because when we did our strategic recovery plan for our American Rescue Plan dollars, the community told us overwhelmingly that they thought access to behavioral health care was one of the biggest issues facing this community. And so we invested a lot of money in that with our American Rescue Plan dollars. And so when we did health access, we wanted to expand it not just to behavioral health, but also to physical health, because we do see where we have folks in our community that don't have access to primary care. And we need to figure out how to make that more accessible for people.
And the legislature recently decided, after I think 10 years, that it was time to get on the bandwagon with regard to the expansion of Medicaid. And surely that will have an impact at Mecklenburg County level and at the county level across the state. You're putting $29 million to health access. How much of that is to handle the impact of whatever may come from Medicaid expansion?
We're adding 75 new positions, I believe around, Adrian can give you the number, in terms of what that costs to add positions specifically to, you know, assist with Medicaid expansion, which we understand will go into effect on December 1st.
It's $5.9 million, and those positions are going to be federally funded or federally and state funded. So
this may or may not go into impact. It's scheduled to go into effect, rather, as you said, later on. But something may happen between now and then or not happen between now and then. But if it does, you have to plan for it either way. So what are you anticipating and how are you planning for this expansion?
Well, we're putting together, the biggest thing we're doing is putting together a hiring plan, because we need those positions to help with eligibility, which is what we do for Medicaid, is we process applications and determine eligibility. And so we are starting now to start putting together a hiring plan so we can get people here and get them in place. And we're also looking to find space to put people. We've got to put the body somewhere. And we're looking at maybe some additional lease space or space at one of our current facilities to accommodate these additional people.
And the county also received $32.5 million to help curb the opioid crisis. That money will be spread over 18 years, and it's coming from, I think, the manufacturers who lost the lawsuit. Would it be correct to say that this is off budget? This is not part of the budget, this money?
That's correct. It is off budget.
So can it be repurposed for other county needs, or will it all be used to deal with opioid and other addictions?
It is specifically dedicated for opioid impact strategies related to opioid abuse, substance abuse.
The county also deals with the workforce development, and you've been doing this, I think, for a while. And you mentioned in your address to County Commission that you are devoting more money to this. We're almost at full employment. So explain in an environment like this the need and what this does for the community.
So we're going to be expanding a program that we call MEC Success, which is a workforce development program, but also provides wraparound services for the entire family. And so it's training and it's stipends for people that want to go and get a credential or go to get their associates. But we also make sure that the family has childcare, that their kids are doing okay in school, that they had potentially have access to transportation and other support services so that we don't just work with the person that wants to upskill, but also make sure that the family has the supports it needs to really help move the family forward. So it's not just workforce, but it is really, really wraparound services for the entire family.
And you've said that the county continues its commitment and efforts in identifying racial disparities and creating pathways to address inequity. Where are we on that path? How many inroads have we made?
Well, we look at everything from an equity lens in terms of what we do to make sure the decisions that we're making are equitable. So, you know, we've done it with our park and recreation capital improvement plan, making sure that the investments that we're making are across all neighborhoods in the county, making sure that we're being equitable in terms of environmental justice, looking at how and where facilities are sited to make sure that we take that bias out of the conversation. So it's really more around that. Of course, we want to make sure that, you know, every child that goes to school, Black and brown children have, you know, the same opportunities for success as every other child. And we're relying on CMS to do that. So we do work on that. And we're hopeful that we're making a good impact. We're also working internally within the county. Every department is creating an equity action plan to make sure that how we deliver services is free of any inherent bias. So we're very focused on it, and it's really part of our work every single day.
City of Charlotte has decided to minimally fund the Arts and Science Council and instead establish their own organization under the Charlotte Arts and Culture Plan. The county, though, is proposing $3.5 million. For the Arts and Science Council, which is $1.4 million, I think, more than last year. Are you at cross purposes with the city on this?
Well, I mean, the county's not really involved in the work going on with the Cultural Arts Plan, but the Arts and Science Council provides services to this community that are important to the county. So our Culture Blocks program is very important to us. And this is really an equity program, making sure that arts are really available in every community in this neighborhood. We're very proud of that program and we continue to expand it. It also provides grants to individual creatives, which is also a workforce development initiative and allows anybody that wants to practice their craft be able to do that. And we're very focused on that. The city voted to cut the Arts and Science Council's operating support. But, you know, I think, which is why I put it in the budget, that they can't provide these other services that the county cares about unless they have sufficient operating support. And so that's why I included that in my budget, as well as operating support for the public art program, which the county is very committed to. And we want to see, you know, all the capital improvement projects that we're doing is going to have a public art component. And we want to make sure that that program continues to be sustainable. So until we know what the city's doing with the Cultural Arts Plan, I believe that investing in the Arts and Science Council makes sense for us.
In discussions with various people at the city level, the impression I was left with is that they seem to view arts as a tourism opportunity as opposed to an arts opportunity? Are you on that page, or are you on a different page? And I have 20 seconds.
Well, I think the arts, I think it is a tourism opportunity, but I think everybody who lives in this community wants access to good arts programs, and people want to be able to practice their craft as an artist. And so I think we have a responsibility to support that as well.
Okay. Dina DiOrio, the Mecklenburg County Manager. Adrian Cox, Mecklenburg County Budget Director. You got off easy this morning, Adrian. But thank you both for joining us to take us through some of the elements of the Mecklenburg County budget proposal for this year. Thanks for the hour.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.